It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What's happening, everybody? Welcome into a brand new episode of Crossed Up. Nice and early on a Tuesday morning after the Phillies have their four-game winning streak snapped by the Angels on Monday night. And probably should have seen it coming if you're a Phillies fan, you listen to the show. Notice that we didn't put one out on Monday. Anthony and I couldn't quite get on the same page with our other obligations. So we were unable to record. And you should probably have known right there and then that they were going to lose the opener against the Angels. And it was a sloppy game, and it was a little bit of a frustrating game, Anthony. Still, obviously, when you look at the big picture, this is a heck of a start and something that everyone should feel really good about. But last night was one of the – it wasn't just a loss. It was kind of one of those losses that if you stayed up for it and you watched it, kind of like sticks in your craw a little bit. It was an annoying loss for sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, when we talked on Saturday last, you know, we were talking about games, you say, well, you know, this is a game that the bullpen gave up, or this is a game that the bullpen gave away. I won't say that they completely gave it away last night, but at the same time, they didn't, you know, Sir Anthony Dominguez doesn't do anything to help the situation because it comes into a tie game, right? So it's a little bit different. They don't blow a lead with the bullpen. But I put last night's loss, you can't always blame managers, but I think that the manager had a rough one last night. I really do. There were some questionable decisions in my mind that could have potentially saved the outing.
I want to get to that. I want to actually go through the game a little bit. Let me just use that as a jumping off point, though. Phillies make the World Series 2 years ago. Their season is resurrected when Rob Thompson becomes the manager.
Yeah.
They get to the NLCS. Certainly things don't end well, but a good run anyway.
Yes.
And this year they're off to their best start in 13 years. They've won a lot of games. You look at all-time Phillies managers, first three seasons, first X amount of games, Rob Thompson there, Rob Thompson here. I'll tell you what's interesting. Is this just a product of the internet? Is it a product of baseball in Philadelphia? Or is there or something more to it? Fans really, from what I see, don't have a lot of faith in Rob Thompson's game-to-game management skills. I feel like everyone concedes that from a clubhouse aspect, getting the most out of guys, being a good listener, being a motivator, keeping the ship steady when things aren't going well, fantastic. But when it comes to tactical maneuvers, he leaves something to be desired. And we did not plan to have this conversation, but it sort of just struck a chord when you said it. Is that fair, do you think? Or is that just more of a product of gotta blame the manager for when things don't go right?
I have a couple of thoughts on this. As
the cops come to get you?
They come fly by my house, right? I have a couple of thoughts on this, Bob. And the first one is I'm going to make a comparison to, you know, for Philadelphia to the past. If you remember, this is kind of how everybody felt about Andy Reid when he was a coach here, right? You know, won a lot of games, was beloved in the locker room. Like, everybody loved playing for Big Red, but that on game day, like, he couldn't manage the clock well. He was not the greatest game day coach. And then ultimately, you know, for as successful as he was, he never won. And of course, he goes on to Kansas City, becomes, you know, one of the all time great coaches. He's won Super Bowls there, whatever.
Good news, Royals fans.
you could look at it from that perspective and say, you know, look, not every coach manager is going to be perfect. But if you had to take, you know, if you had choices, this isn't a bad choice to have, right? To have a guy who, he fumbles things up in game and it's frustrating in the moment. But in the grand scheme, when you look at it from a 1,000-foot view, he's actually a pretty good manager. And I tend to agree with that philosophy. I tend to think that Rob is a pretty good manager who occasionally screws things up in games. And that's, I'm good with that. Okay. And I know, like you said, in the moment, it's tough to say, but overall I'm good with it.
Do you think that is though, just a product of the way that we consume these games? Or do you really think, you know, you look at it and say, maybe to some degree, he's, I don't want to say gotten a pass, but some of the people that sort of support or defend him would say, listen, that 22 team wasn't a World Series team. They knocked on the door. What a hell of a run it was. It was sort of house money. I'm not going to fault him for removing Wheeler in the decider in Houston. You get to last year and say, well, like, how do you let Johan Rojas swing a bat in a key situation against the Diamondbacks? Or how do you keep going to Craig Kimbrel late? Like, should he be held accountable for those decisions that have ultimately ended their seasons? Probably, you know, I think some people think prematurely.
I mean, yeah. I mean, of course. I mean, but at the same time, I don't look at them as fireable offenses, right? I mean, like, I look at it and say, yeah, I would have done that differently. You know, and in the moment we talk about it. So it's not like it's even hindsight being 2020. Man, they're
What is going on over at your house today?
I don't know, man. A lot of.
I'm going to turn on Action News to see what's up here, man.
What's going on in Delco?
You might want to take cover.
Again, and I also think this was the other point I wanted to make, Bob, is I look at it as the people who make the most noise are the equivalent of like WIP callers. Right. So what makes the people who listen to sports, what makes sports radio so popular is not the callers. It's the amount of listeners that they have, and that your callers are a very, very small fraction of the people who listen to the radio, but they are the loudest people who listen to the radio. Okay. And so same thing, I think on social media, I think that there is a smaller percentage of fans who are make the most noise when things just don't go right. And we are a, what have you done for me lately fan base for sure. We talked about this in the past. And so I think that you combine those things together, it makes it easier to look at to say, everybody thinks Rob's doing a bad job. When in fact, I would argue that that's only about a 10% of the fan base population who really feels that way. And I think the rest of the people are kind of a little bit more either agnostic to him or support the managerial style that he has.
Yeah, as somebody that's coached the game and coached at a varsity level, which is certainly not college or major league baseball, but for a number of years, tactical decisions matter. They're going to win you games sometimes. They're going to lose you games occasionally. I do think that Rob was sort of responsible to a degree for what played out last night. And I didn't think he had a great game on Sunday. I think that pushing Taijuan Walker into the seventh inning in his first game back, knew he threw 102 pitches in his last rehab start. But, you know, really, do you really want to push him there to that degree right away? I wouldn't have. And I think you can sit here and debate and question and wonder about certain maneuvers that he makes. But I would say, and I would echo what you just said, you step back and you look at what he's done overall from the day that he inherited this team, and it was a mess when he did, to where they're at right now. And I don't know how you could objectively look at it and say, this guy hasn't done a great job and isn't the right guy for this group. I really do think that overall it's about culture, connection, steering the ship, steady hand, knowing when to push, knowing when to back off. And I think that there's a lot that goes on in there that we're not privy to, certainly the fans are not privy to. And I think he's just been really good for them. So now let's rip the manager. Because last night, I just don't know. It's interesting because you're playing a team that has really struggled here lately in the Angels, and you get up 3-0 in the blink of an eye, and the offense did not tack on after the first inning. They were 1-for-8 with runners in scoring position. After Boehm singled in the first, they did not have another base hit with runners in scoring position last night. So you can pin this on the offense to a degree, but man, like the pitching and the way that the pitching's been handled, even on this road trip, which has been a successful one to this point, there have been numerous times where I'm like, I don't get it, man. So why don't you walk through what you saw last night and what you thought about pushing Sanchez? Was that smart? Going to Dominguez again, which we have to talk about him. Like it might be time to like peel that way back. And I don't mean just one mop-up inning against the Padres that's a 1-2-3 inning and then shoot you back into a high-leverage spot. I don't know that we can do that for a while here with him.
Yeah, I mean, we'll start with the decision to leave Sanchez in after the fifth inning. And I know the fifth inning was a quick inning for him. It was a good inning. And so you say, okay, well, didn't have his best stuff, got you through five. You know, maybe you take – he's a guy who pitches – with when he's confident. He's one of those guys who needs that kind of, you know, develop the confidence in his game in order to pitch well. And so you look at it and say, hey, you toughed it out, you didn't have your best stuff, but you're going to get out of this after five innings, only giving up two runs, not the worst start in the world. But then he puts him right back out in the sixth. And look, if you have Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, or Ranger Suarez, I was going to get to Garrett Stubbs. He's in the back of my head for a second. Or Ranger Suarez, with the way that they're pitching, and you go an extra inning with them, and they don't have it, and they give up that inning, you know, whatever, you can at least go, okay, those guys have a track record of being able to go longer in the games and being successful. And it just didn't work out this time around. So you don't really hammer the manager for that. But to do it, you know, to go an extra inning with Taijuan Walker in his first start of the year on Sunday, and then to go an extra inning with Christopher Sanchez last night in a game where he had one swing and miss the entire game, okay, for any at-bat, that's where it's a head-scratcher to me. And so he puts him out to start the sixth inning, and when that happens, he gives up, I think it was two hits, or was it a hit and a walk? I'm going to look it up real quick. It was hit and hit. Okay, so it was Taylor Ward had a single to right, and then Brandon Drury singles the center. And then he takes him out, and Kirkring comes in. They get a sacrifice bunt, an infield ground out that scores a run, and then Kirkring gives up a single, and it ties the game. And that's, you know, and it's like, that didn't have to happen. That inning didn't have to happen because you put Sanchez back out without, and he obviously didn't have his stuff. And you haven't been overtaxing the bullpen. So that's why it's perplexing to me that you don't go get him after the fifth inning.
So let me ask you this. Is it possible that they tried to push Sanchez through the sixth inning so that they would not have to go to Dominguez? Because presumably, if Sanchez gets through the sixth unscathed, you can go to Kirkering in the seventh clean. Yeah. And then if you look at the way that they were deploying the bullpen last night, that probably removes Dominguez.
Alvarado. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so maybe Rob's saying, all right, he had a decent fifth. I don't want to use Dominguez in an important situation tonight. So I'm going to press my luck here a little bit.
Yeah, and look, I get it. They're in the midst of going, and this is, again, I question this, and you know, people are asking me why I question it. And I didn't even write this part about it, but this is the reality. This is why going with a six-man rotation is a conundrum, because now you have one less arm in the bullpen, right? Because you have one less reliever available to you out in the bullpen. And so I think that you're right, Bob, and I think that that's a thing. We're saying, okay, well, we have one less guy. Let's try and make sure our starters can get at least through six innings. And then we're set up okay in the bullpen at that point. Having not being in that spot, obviously you don't trust Dominguez to come in a game with runners on base. So he has to go to Kirkering in the sixth as opposed to the clean inning in the seventh. And then your fingers crossed, let's hope that Dominguez can get us through the seventh inning. And that's really what it comes down to. I see it, but at the same time, Kirkering in his last outing went an inning and two thirds. So he had an up down, proved that he could do it. So why not have him come out in the fifth? And if he has a clean fifth, he can pitch the sixth. And if he doesn't, and then you have to go to Dominguez, okay, fine. So then you have to go to Dominguez. But the fact of the matter is you have a guy who has proven he can go more than one inning. Have him come out and pitch the sixth and seventh.
So what's interesting to me watching these games the last 2 days now, I thought that Walker would be done after six. They try to push him to seven. It doesn't go well. I thought Sanchez would be done after five. They push him to six. It doesn't go well. The Phillies for years, I mean, this staff, Rob Thompson, Caleb Cotham, like I've always sometimes thought that they were a little bit conservative with how they've used their starting pitchers. Like, hey, man, take the training wheels off a little bit. I almost feel like we're seeing the opposite right now. And I wonder to what degree there's some like fact finding going on here. Do you think it's possible that they're saying to themselves, we need to see what these guys have? Like, we are trying to figure out how we're going to do this moving forward. So, yeah, I know that Chris Sanchez can get me through five innings, and, you know, credit to him for trying to piece it together. He wasn't very good last night. Okay. But hey, can you really be a bulldog and go back out there and give us one more big one? Can you do it? Can you take that step? Are you more than that five inning, two run, three run guy? Hey, Taiwan, you're making $18 million a year. Like, this is the varsity. Come on, buddy. Like, go get me that seventh inning today. Like, do you think that they might be pushing these guys a little bit to just get more information about what they are? Or am I taking two games at the end of April and making something out of nothing?
No, I think you're spot on.
Because it just runs so counter to what they usually do with starters. I mean, how many times do we sit down there after a game and a guy goes five innings and he's pretty good, and Rob says, well, we wanted to keep him right there. It was a good start, you know, and it's all about like building the confidence.
Yeah.
This is not what they do with these guys usually.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And you know, we would be hypocritical if we say we didn't question it before when he would pull guys early, to say, you know, we're being critical now that he's leaving guys in, right?
I mean, how many times have we said, oh, they're going to kill this bullpen, man? Like, he could have just gone out and gave him a sixth inning. They could have pushed him to seven.
He
Walker threw 102 pitches. He was only at 90. He could have get, you know. So
sure.
We've done that a million times over, which is why I'm looking at this going like, man, this is weird.
Yeah, and this is why you're 100% right. And I'll tell you that I'm not in favor of this approach. Because the reality of it is, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, if you want to win this division, these kinds of games matter.
Opportunity missed last night. Right. Atlanta loses. That happens, what, once a week? So,
yes, exactly. I mean, yeah. Exactly. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, you can't have it become a situation where it's like, well, we're just figuring out what we are, figuring out what our guys are, what we have. No, you gotta manage to win the game in the moment, right? And I you don't want to do it too far where you're burning your bullpen every game to try and win a game. I get it. And if that was happening on a nightly basis, I could almost understand this happening more frequently, right? But the reality of it is that you haven't had to use this bullpen to this point. So why are we pushing these guys, these starters, if they don't have the, you know, have it? If you pull Walker after six innings, you look at his game on Sunday and go, six innings, three runs, okay, first start of the season, wasn't great but wasn't terrible, right? That's kind of, you come away with that, like, okay, feel a little good about it. All right, great. Put him back out there for the seventh, he pitches an extra third of an inning, gives up three more runs, right? And it's another walk, two hits, home run, three runs. Now all of a sudden you pitch six and a third, six runs, and you know what was it? Nine base runners, eight, but whatever it was that he gave up. And it's like, well, now that start looked bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Same thing last night with Sanchez. He gets through. He doesn't have his stuff early. It's obvious he doesn't have his stuff early. Has a good fifth inning. You get him out of the game. Be like, hey, he battled and he gave us the five innings, and he didn't have his best stuff. Good stuff, but no, you push him back out there, and he gives up the hits. Because ends up giving up four runs, it ends up being a bad start. I don't know. I look at it and say those are the moments in the season where you go, one little tweak here or there could make it for a different outcome.
Yeah, I think that's a totally fair way to look at it. You know, I don't want to spend a whole heck of a lot of time breaking down one loss here, but I will say the offense had a strange night. They only produced what? Six hits. They get the three runs early. They do a good job getting out fast. They've been really good at that all year long.
Yeah.
They've scored first in 22 of their 30 games.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I'm looking at the box score right now and I see 19 and 11. I'm like, damn, the Phillies are 19 and 11 after 30 games. That's pretty freaking good. So I'm trying to stay grounded here, but I'm like, it also could have been 20 and 10, like a nice round number going into that next set of games. But yeah, like, you know, only six hits, but they walk, as you pointed out before we started recording, nine times last night. They put 15 runners on base, and as you said, that should be enough to get it done. So situationally, I think the Phillies have done a very good job of runners in scoring position lately. They've maximized and capitalized on their opportunities, but that wasn't the case last night. And how many times do you watch it play out? It's my worst in terms of just watching the flow of a game, a cadence of the game. An early lead where you score a bunch right away and then you put up a couple zeros. I think that is the worst flow to the game maybe possible, other than falling behind 4 or 5-0 yourself early on. Like, I just feel like you have to be able to tack on at least one right away. Like, I just watching that game last night, I had that feeling like I don't love the way this one feels.
Yeah. No, you're right on about that. And there were so many missed opportunities. You have another situation where a guy got picked off, Rojas gets picked off on base.
And you know what's crazy about that, man? He was almost picked off right before that.
Yeah.
And I actually tweeted that, and I'm like, that is so bad. It is so bad.
Yeah.
He's sometimes on the bases, man. I'm like, what? I know the athleticism is there. His foot speed is fantastic, but man, like, you gotta have a little bit more awareness sometimes.
Yeah. There is a little bit of a lack of awareness, I think. And even on, there was a play early in the game, was it, when there was a base hit up the middle and they held the runner at third and he wasn't throwing the ball in. Mm-hmm. And you can hear the broadcasters like yelling, get it in. What are you doing? Like, you got to get that ball in. You can't just hold on to it. Do you think, you know, and it was kind of, it's just kind of like those little awareness things. But yeah, Bob, I mean, the offense, it did come up disappointing, you know, at times last night. There were so many chances to tack on and they just didn't do it. And you're right. As you're watching that game, you're like, oh boy.
Yeah,
that one could come back to bite you, and it did come back to bite them. One thing, since we're talking about the offense and we were criticizing the manager, one other thing that we didn't talk about once we hit record, but we talked about prior to hitting record, once you're down 6-4 in the eighth inning, right, Matt Moore's on the mound for the Angels in the eighth inning, lefty, former Phil, strikes out Castellanos to start the inning, but then he walks Stubbs.
Were you covering the Phillies when Matt Moore was here?
You were.
Yeah,
I didn't start until the year after Matt Moore.
I didn't know if you were down there with me at that point.
Yeah.
Maybe one of my least favorite guys to talk to. Just total lack of awareness. Like, maybe a good guy, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not going to sit here and rip him as a human being or anything. Might have been a good clubhouse guy. Might have been good inside the locker room or whatever. But just total lack of accountability. Like, he would go out there, get his ass kicked, and he'd be like, why are you asking me that? You know, how dare you ask Matt Moore about his struggles? Like, it was he was a bozo here, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, go ahead.
So he comes on in the eighth. So you have one runner on, one out, you're down two runs. And now you got Johan Rojas and Garrett Stubbs coming up the bat in the bottom of the eighth. In my mind, you're pinch hitting for both, trying to win this game. I understand that maybe you don't want to, when you give your starting catcher the day off, you really, really want him to have the day off, and you don't want to have to use him. But the circumstances have now changed in this game, and now you're losing to a team you should be beating. And you need a hit in that spot. So maybe you say, JT, can you suck it up for an inning? Can you go out there, you know, and give us an at bat and maybe catch an inning for us and it'll be okay. I honestly would have turned to both Merrifield and then Real Muto. At the very least, I would pinch hit Real Muto for Rojas. Even if you want to leave Stubbs in the game, fine. But I think that you have to do it. He doesn't. Rojas strikes out in an ugly at bat. Stubbs made good contact, but it was a fly ball to right field. And they get out of the inning. And so now you're still down two going into the ninth when they get a run and Brandon Marsh strikes out with the tying run on base.
I agree with you. I will just say, though, you know, JT Realmuto started 25 games this season. He's caught 222 and two-thirds innings, which is the most of any catcher in baseball. And that probably doesn't come to a surprise to anybody listening to this, because it feels like he's always back there. He's also gotten the shit kicked out of him so far this year, too. I mean, he's taken a beating. And I almost just wonder if they're saying, I don't care. Like, we're just not doing it. We need to give this guy a full clean day off tonight.
Yeah.
And they probably do. They probably need to do it more occasionally than they do, in my opinion. So I agree in the moment. How do you not make that move there? How do you not let him taking it back a key situation against a lefty? But long-term thinking, I would like to see a little bit more attention to preservation there with him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get it. And that's why I say I kind of understand why you're not pinch hitting for Stubbs, right? Because of that. But I think that I think you need to try and have somebody who's going to have a better at bat than what Rojas gave you in that spot, striking out. I mean, even if you scratch across just the one run in the eighth, and then you get back to the top of the order to the ninth and say, we only need one run, it changes the whole dynamic of that inning, you know. But anyway,
I want to talk about Johan Rojas real quick. And I want to talk about Alec Boehm, because I don't know how we can have a podcast with what he's doing
player right of the week
and not talk about him in more detail. But I was listening to WIP the other night, and the host said something to the effect of, well, look, all those Johan Rojas haters, look at what happens when you give a guy an opportunity to breathe and you see that he can do it. And everyone's awfully quiet now. And I'm like, okay, like, he's hitting 240. That's good. You know, I mean, if you told me that he was hitting 240 at the end of April, I would have been like, hell yeah, man, that's good stuff. Good for him and good for the Phillies. I will tell you, I know I have not always been the most positive guy or optimistic guy in projecting what Johan Rojas is. And I want him to, is, you know, why wouldn't I? I mean, he seems like a good dude, and he's young and he's cheap and he's got a lot of energy and seems, you know, there's no rooting against here. I'm just not convinced at all. I don't think he can hit. I don't, Anthony. I'm sorry. Like, I know that sounds like harsh, and he's done a good job, and I guess I just need to see more. I don't think he's going to be a 280 hitter, and I don't expect him to be, but like, some of his at bats just like really bother me. Like, and I know against Nick Castellanos, you say, well, what are you're going to pick on Johan Rojas and not talk about a guy like Castellanos? Like, it's not that. Forget about the other guys. It's just like, are we really at the point where we're totally cool saying, like, yeah, Johan Rojas, pencil him in as a 250 hitter the remainder of the season? He's arrived. And I just don't see it that way.
No, not at all. Not at all, Bob. And it's because I see, does he run into the occasional good hit? Yeah, he does. He certainly does. Like, he had the double the other day, right? It was a really good one. But at the same time, he gets a lot of, there's just so much weak contact.
Like, do you see? I think what I'm trying to figure out is what the Phillies are and where they're trying to go. I'm trying to look at Johan Rojas as his future in two different ways. Can he be an everyday starting center fielder for this team beyond this season? Like, maybe. And is he the guy that helps you get to where you want to go this season? And I know that the formula, if everyone hits around him and if this lineup does what it's supposed to do, he doesn't have to hit 250. That's such a cop-out. Like, you got to be better. And I just don't know, man. I think, you know, I'm certainly willing to let this play out until July. I'm not saying you got to get him out of there. I'm not saying he should be benched. Yeah. I'm not saying he should be sent down. But I'm looking at it. What I've seen so far, I guess, is encouraging. Let's see what happens the next 2.5 months. But it would be a damn shame if they get to October again and they're giving away a free out in the ninth inning, or, you know, late in the playoffs, because they decided, like, well, you know, everyone else should have done their job. I don't really want to hear that this time around.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Bob. And you know, I've I give him a little bit of props because I think that he's been he's been able to withstand the, you know, the early season disaster that it was. I mean, it was
totally
bad.
Agree with that. Totally agree right? with that. For a young kid to start, for a young kid to hear people like me and I'll just say me and other people, but me say this kid can't hit. What are they doing? This is their weakness. You know, and then he starts 1 for 22.
Couldn't even get the ball out of the infield.
Yeah, he couldn't get the ball out of the infield. And then he digs his way out of it. Yeah. That's impressive as hell.
Yeah.
Kudos to him.
Yeah, it is. I give him a lot of credit for that.
Absolutely.
Because it's more the mental side to me that impresses me than the actual 100%.
Physical side. I'm very impressed with his ability to overcome that. I'm just not impressed with his ability to hit. I don't know.
Yes. And that's what it becomes. It's that, you know what? You withstood you did something that major leaguers need to do to stay in the major leagues, is you withstood a really, really bad slump and didn't let it eat away at you. Okay. And you're able to get back to where he's at now. Great. But where he's at now is still not good enough in my mind from an offensive perspective. Like, if he gets on base, he can't run into getting picked off, you know, and that's the second time this year I think he's gotten picked off.
He got picked off on the inside move at second base. Yeah. I think back in the Red Series, I want to say in Philadelphia.
I think that's what it was. Yeah.
Look, I mean, let's be fair here. His last 15 games, he's hitting .288 with an OPS right around 700. I mean, that's pretty good. I want to be fair about this, but where, you know, sometimes guys are playing really well and you're like, I hear you, but let's pump the brakes a little bit. And when guys aren't playing well, you're like, look, this is bad. And I admit it, like, there's certain guys that just aren't playing well, but I won't bury them either based on a 15 game stretch. So it's just one of those things. I'm starting to notice it. I just still feel the way I feel. And I guess we'll see. Stay tuned. Okay, Alec Boehm. Alec Boehm right now is on one, and you said it, the NL Player of the Week. He's hitting .364 with a 1.047 OPS. OPS plus 195, man. He's knocked in 29 runs in 30 games. He has been awesome. And another guy that I've been somewhat critical of over time. I've always liked his two-strike approach, the ability to use all fields. He hits in a different way than a lot of other major league hitters profile these days in 2024, and that's awesome. But I've always been wanting a little bit more out of him in terms of driving the ball into gaps, extra base hits, defensively. But man, like, look at what he's doing right now. And this is kind of, I don't want to say this is what I thought we were getting when they drafted him, but he has really put it together here this first month of the season. And I'm kind of curious as to what you've seen from him and what you sort of expect this might look like by the end of the year. Are we talking about an all-star this season? Are we talking about a guy that can hit over 300 and drive in 120 runs, let's say? I mean, he's on pace for a hell of a lot more than that. I think he's on pace for 147 right now. I don't necessarily know that he finishes there, but like, what are you seeing from Alec Boehm?
I've been impressed by Alec Boehm. The thing that's impressed me the most about him is how he's hitting the ball to left field. The one thing about Alec Boehm has always been he goes the opposite way or up the middle, right? You know, he's got that swing, that type of swing. But I always felt like the one thing that was kind of missing for him was being able to pull the ball down the line or hit the ball with some pop to his pull side, which is where you really need, that's where your power is going to really come from, right? And I think that what we've seen in the first month of the season is a lot more of that. You know, he's still hitting the ball the other way, still doing his usual, but he's added an element to his game. And I think that that's the difference between being a 280 hitter and a 360 hitter, right, in the first month. So I've been incredibly impressed by him. And the Phillies wouldn't be 19-11 without Alec Boehm. As much as their starting pitching carried them in the first month, Alec Boehm and then to a slightly lesser extent, Trey Turner and Brandon Marsh have been the reason that this team has gotten off to the good start that it's gotten off to.
Yeah, it's a good observation by you. He pulled the ball 30% of the time last season, and this season he's up to 36%, which might not seem like a big jump, but it is, especially when you just take the numbers and look at the growth there. So he's turning on more pitches, and it's resulted in more extra base hits, namely doubles. The thing that I love when I dig into him a little bit, you go through the splits, like he's hitting 361 against right-handed pitching. He's hitting 371 against left-handed pitching, slugging a little bit higher against lefties. But I mean, the OPS 1.017 against righties, 1.107 against lefties, the consistency, he's immune to those platoon splits. And I find that to be, you know, that's pretty useful when you're trying to construct the lineup to feel like, okay, we can slot him up if we're seeing a lefty, but against a righty,
that was an ambulance. It wasn't the police.
All right. Hopefully those things weren't all intertwined with one another, separate incidents. But yeah, I mean, against righties though, you don't have to feel like, oh, all right, we can't really play him as much, or we don't feel as good about what he might do in this situation. His consistency has been impressive. And then as always, he's always been a good hitter with runners in scoring position. He's a career, I believe, heading into last night, he was hitting .324 in nearly 500-plus plate appearances with runners in scoring position. This season, he's been fantastic. He's hitting .452. He's 14-for-31 with runners in scoring position with a 1.301 OPS, man. Like, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
My question off of all of this is, where do you hit him in this lineup? Do you ride that hot hand and just put him right behind Harper and say, you're the best protection? Alec Bohm, who might not hit 20 home runs this season, hitting cleanup for this Phillies team.
Well, you know, if you remember, Bob, back in the playoffs last year, one of the big debates was, why is Alec Bohm hitting cleanup?
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, he's their cleanup hitter and should be their cleanup hitter, right?
Yeah.
I keep
this is a very different player than what we saw last October.
I agree. But yes, this is where he belongs in this lineup at this point. I don't think you touched the top four. I think the top four are spot on. I mean, actually, probably top five with Real Muto in that spot. I don't think you're putting anybody else there. I mean, other than maybe occasionally you can slide Marsh, but I don't think Marsh is a five. I think he's more of a six.
Are you ready for this real quick?
Go ahead.
I mean, like, these numbers are bananas, man. So he's on pace for 211 hits, 65 doubles. This is amazing. So he's on pace for 211 hits, 65 doubles, 5 triples, and 22 home runs, 92 extra base hits, and 157 runs batted in, 81 walks. That's what his current pace looks like over 162 games.
Yeah, if he did that, he would be MVP.
He would be MVP. Yeah, he absolutely MVP. Would be MVP. Who would you say right now, forget the odds, we don't need to look at the odds, but who would you say right now the National League is ahead of him in the MVP race?
Mookie Betts.
Mookie Betts, right? Is that it?
Well, it's probably Shohei.
Okay.
I mean,
West Coast bias, man.
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, it's probably that way. But I mean, I can't think of anybody else in the National League. Maybe I'm forgetting somebody.
So 1 month in, he is a slam dunk starter for the National League All-Star team, right?
Oh, it's not even close. Is there another third baseman that's even close?
No, I mean, I wrote about that in the newsletter yesterday. If you go through and look at all the Major League third basemen, let alone the National League, he is 1-1-1-1-1 across all key offensive categories other than home runs. And when you're doing that with the doubles and the extra base hits and the runners in scoring position, I don't really give a shit about the home runs. It's ironic too, because I've always said, like, I don't know, how do you have a guy that's this big and this strong and you watch him take BP, or occasionally he'll rock one to the deepest part of the park and you're like, God damn, like, unlock that, man. Like, there's 30 home runs in that bat. But if you're going to do all this, you can hit 10 home runs. I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I think that Bob he's doing, and I don't know, again, this is an eye thing. I'm just watching this. I don't have any statistical stuff to back this up. Maybe you have it right there in front of you, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. I think he's chasing a little bit less too, and so because of that, I think he's getting more pitches in the zone to attack. And so we always thought that he had a really professional approach as a young hitter. but now it's gotten so refined that he's laying off. I mean, he's walking more than I've ever remembered him walking. And you just pointed out that that's what got me when you talked about what he's on pace for. I'm like, you know, that's what that dawned on me watching his at-bats. I don't think he's chasing as many pitches out of the zone. So again, an observational thing.
Yeah, out of zone swing percentage. Like last year, he was at 34.3%, and for his career, he's at 33%. This season, 27.5% out of zone swing percentage. And then when you look at in-zone contact, pitches in the strike zone, 93% he's making contact on, which is up over his career average of 87%. So the numbers certainly bear out exactly what you're talking about. He has been more selective. He's getting better pitches to hit, and he's doing more damage when he swings. So it's been really impressive to watch, man. The guy's on fire. Obviously, he's going to go through a period where this is not the case. But for what it is right now, it has been very, very impressive to watch. And one other thought I'll give you. I was talking to Mike Gill of 97.3 ESPN yesterday. I did a hit, and we were talking about Alec Bohm. And I said something that I had not planned to say. And I don't know if it was a stupid thing to say, but you know how sometimes you get on these things and you're tired of saying the same thing all the time.
Yeah, I know. We do it all the time.
I just asked you, where should Alec Bohm hit? Michael always asks me about the lineup, and I go, I don't know, Mike. You know, like, just who fucking cares? If guys hit, they hit. If not, so I'm like, I hate the lineup construction question, but I know people care about it, so we talk about it. Let me just give you this one. Alec Bohm's making $4 million this year. He doesn't become an unrestricted free agent until 2027. So he's got some time, but just look at what he's made over the last couple of years. So he comes up, right? And he gets a deal. He makes some decent money because he's a high draft pick. So he comes out and signs for a few million bucks, whatever. 2020, he's making $500,000. 21 makes $575,000. 22 makes $715,000. 23, he's making $748,000. Now, people listening to the show are like, damn, that's a lot of money. I wish I was making $748,000 a year. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, if you are a third baseman who plays sort of suspect defense and you're a 260 hitter, but you can't drive the ball, what's your career going to look like? Right? Like, how long are you playing? And so there's like a little bit of uncertainty as to what your 30s may look like just from a career standpoint, right?
Yeah.
But he makes $4 million this year, and he will continue to make this money moving forward. His arbitration year is obviously the salary jumps. Starting to look like a guy that's going to go and get a pretty big contract from someone when this is all said and done, when he becomes a free agent. Just think that there's like maybe something to the fact that there's a little bit more financial security with him. Like, hey, I got some money in my pocket now. I'm making $4 million this year. Like, do you think that sometimes, maybe not even to him specifically, but that the financial situation can dictate how a guy plays? Like, I feel counted against a player. Oh, he signed a big contract and now he's struggling. He's checked out. He used his year to get the big deal, and now look at him. I almost wonder if like there's like a something to be said for like he's got some security here, he's making some decent money. That changed like the way that you kind of lived your life a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can. I mean, let's keep in mind, right? I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting. Like
you're still dangling the carrot of the big payday out there. Like he hasn't hit the big one yet, but you know, there's a difference between making $700,000 and $4 million. I know that we're talking about a subject that nobody can relate to here.
Right.
But, I mean, man.
I do think it can relax you when you finally get that first bag, right? I mean, it really does. It can finally relax you as an individual.
You know what I would say? I would still be chasing after that $150 million in 27 and all that.
Yeah.
You know what I'd be saying to myself right now? The first time that paycheck clears when you're making $4 million, that first check that comes in the middle of the season or the beginning of the season, you go, if I'm him, I'm like, I'm motherfucking Alec Bohm. Look at this check. My swag level has escalated significantly.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. And that's fair to say. And I think you've seen guys do that, right? Where they finally know that they've that they've made it. That kind of locks you in when you make that big of a jump, when you're suddenly making more than four times what you've ever made before. It can be a relaxing thing. Like, okay, I'm here. This is me. Yeah. This is where I belong. Not to mention, you do this, at, you know, he's at that age in baseball where you have that breakout, right? That 27. Right? How many times have we seen stories about the 27-year-old season is the season where you determine what you're going to be, the kind of player you're going to be. You're going to have that breakout year, and then your next 5 years, you're in your prime, 27 to 32. That's when you're going to, you know, make your money and make your mark on the sport. He's there, right? I mean, he's at that point. He's making that money, and I think it does relax you a little bit, right? I mean, that's good. Good for him. Good for Alec Bohm.
Quick over under on him real quick, and then we'll wrap things up unless there's anything else you want to hit on. Alec Bohm this season, when it's all said and done, 162 games in, over under 320 hitter.
Under.
Over under 20 home runs.
Over.
Over under 55 doubles.
That's a tough one. I will say, I'll still say under.
Top 10 in NL MVP voting.
Under.
Okay. So you expect a little regression here.
I do. I mean, and the questions you're asking make, I'm like, oh, I'm going to sound like
a nerd. All right, so when we clip up the promo here for this, Anthony Sanfilippo doesn't buy Alec Bohm's start.
No, but I think that the over-under numbers you set were good. I think that, like, he's going to be close to all of them.
Yeah.
And the ones that I went under with, I just think they're going to be
slightly. Yeah, it's like you have him hitting 240 here with, right.
Yeah, I mean, if he hits 310 –
I got
it's
you.
Under your 320. You're taking it. You're taking a 310 Alec Bohm. And I have him over 20, but only slightly over 20 home runs. I have him at like 22, right? You know? And if
he's. All right, I got one more. I got one more for you then. Go ahead. Is really going to tell the story. This is the one right here.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with the Atlanta Braves at all, if you've watched them over the last few years. They have a third baseman. His name's Austin Riley, and everybody loves him. He's the man. He's the best. He's the future. Next Chipper Jones. Austin Riley's last seven games, he's 3 for 26. He's hitting 115. This season, he has two home runs, only 14 runs batted, and he's hitting 225. So when it's all said and done at the end of 162, and I look at Austin Riley and I look at Alec Bohm, who's going to have the better season? Austin, oh, no. Austin is a hell of a gap he has to bridge. Man, you Austin, got like – this is like Riley. This is like someone running the mile and they fall down in the first lap. And the person's out like a full lap ahead. You've got Austin Riley dusting himself off and lapping Alec Bohm at the end, huh?
Well, yeah, I don't even know. Yeah, I do. I mean, I think Austin Riley is that good of a player. And if I remember correctly, and I'm gonna look this up real quick, because if I remember correctly, he got off to a pretty slow start last year as well. Maybe not as slow as he got off to this year. But if I remember correctly, his first month of last season wasn't the greatest either. And as I go and look, he was a little bit better than this. He was hitting 253. His OPS was still under 800 though, at the end of April last year. So I he's a guy that really ramps it up once the season really kind of kicks in. Yeah. You know, I mean, he went from 253 to 281 and he ended up being an 861 OPS. So his OPS jumped 70 points. So I think there'll be a little bit of regression from Bohm, a little bit of improvement from Riley, and I think Riley will ultimately, but they're probably gonna be close, Bob. That's a good comparison.
Okay, it's a good I like comp. That. All right. Interesting. Yeah, we'll monitor that situation periodically as the season progresses.
Yeah. There's one guy we wanted to talk about and we didn't even get to from the Phillies before we get to one last thing, and that's Dominguez.
Oh yeah. I mean,
like, what do you do with this guy?
We probably could have led with that, honestly.
Yeah.
What do you do with it? Yeah. What do you do with it? Because we could sit here and I've done this in the past. I've done it as recently as 3 weeks ago. I say, hey, just look at the fastball sometimes. And he's still able to beat really good hitters with it.
Yep.
That arm, what he used to be, he could still be that. He's a disaster right now. He is a total disaster. And you cannot trust him in any meaningful spot. And I don't know what you do. It really begs the question. It's a guy that you've seen perform well in important situations in the past. He still has a live arm, but there are obvious issues going on here. And we can talk about Johan Rojas, right? And say, oh, you know, if you're trying to win a World Series and you're trying to take advantage of a spot on your schedule that you can make a move here, this is where you can win the, you know, stay in a division race or maybe even gain an upper hand in it. You can't mess around. And so how long do you give Sir Anthony Dominguez the opportunity to figure it out? And I don't just mean pitching high to medium leverage situations. I mean rostering him. So I would ask you this, like, what do you do in the short term? And how long of a leash do you give this situation?
Yeah, it's a good question, Bob. And one thing I'm not 100% sure about, I've heard people say, well, why don't you just do the same thing that you did with Alvarado 2 years ago, where you sent him down, got him right, and he came back and he was great, right?
I'm almost certain that you'd have to agree to it. You can't.
Yeah, because I was just about to say he's got more than five years service time. He would have to accept an option.
Yes.
Go down. It's not that he's out of options, but because of his service time, there is no option. You can't option him. He would have to accept a reassignment to the minor leagues.
Is that where you tap Jose Alvarado on the shoulder and be like, yo, we need you to talk to him and say,
yeah,
this is what's best for you and for us, and do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And that's what it really comes down to. Otherwise, when are you using him in games? Because you cannot put him into a key spot right now. And like I said earlier on, it wasn't as bad of an inning as it seemed until the wild pitch. The wild pitch is where it all unravels for him.
Yeah.
You know, so it really wasn't that bad going into that. It was just that, and then he gives up a big hit, another hit after that.
It's tough. It's like, all over the place. How many times have you seen, look at a month, oh, he had a 8 ERA in April, but wow, look at what he's done in May. Like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to write a story in 3 weeks where we look at someone's April numbers and they're either going to be really good or really bad. And this is going to be the complete opposite.
Yep.
And I guess the Phillies are hoping right now that he's one of those guys, but, and easy to say when he's struggling the way that he has, you just don't see, the light at the end of the tunnel right now. I mean, the wild pitches and stuff, like, this isn't new. Like, his command and his trust in himself, he said after the game, I still believe in myself, but he does not pitch. Why I don't believe that, frankly, is because he does not pitch like he believes in himself.
Right.
You know who pitch? You know who stinks but pitches like he believes in himself? Craig Kimbrell. Like, he doesn't get the result, but he seems totally oblivious to the fact that he's not that good anymore.
Yeah.
So Anthony Dominguez looks and acts like a guy who is really struggling with his confidence. Does that make sense? Am I nuts?
No, you're not nuts.
Because that's what I see.
Yeah,
that's what I see.
It's not right now. And I'm not sure that the Phillies want to risk sending him down. I mean, maybe it's a conversation. I mean, like you said, maybe there is a conversation to be had about, hey, we're not sending you down and forgetting about you. We just want you to go down there, work on a couple things, and come back in 2-3 weeks, and then you'll be fine again. Like, that's kind of the idea. That might be the best thing to do. But yeah, he's not usable in a key spot in a game right now. And that's concerning because they're not quite ready to hand over those kind of spots to Kirkering, obviously. And that really leaves you with only Hoffman as a reliable right-handed option in the bullpen. So that's the one spot. And I kind of felt like going in the offseason that was the one thing that they kind of – if you go back and listen to our, you know, podcast from back then – it was like, the one thing that I think that they still need, that they're still missing, is another right-handed reliever. And this is part of the problem. And this is, you know, Dominguez has not rebounded. I thought he would. That's another thing I predicted. If you go back to our early season predictions, I thought he would rebound, and maybe he still will. But as of right now, he's not there, and you cannot rely on him.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Speaking of which, real quick, just people that you can't rely on, relievers. You have seen what's going on in Baltimore right now with Craig Kimbrell, right?
Yes.
What a disaster. What a disaster. Blues two games over the weekend to the Oakland A's of all teams.
Yeah.
He actually the other day on Sunday, he comes out and, you know, he looks like he's hurt, talks the trainer into staying in the game, says, "Nah, I'm good. I'm all right." Throws a pitch. They walk off the field. Two pitches later, ball's in the right field seats. He's pulling three saves already. Like, he might, I don't know if they've done it. I haven't followed up in the last 24 hours here, but he might lose that job a month into the season.
Yeah.
And the way that we remember him, certainly in the playoffs, is where the issues really started. But he only blew five games for the Phillies during the regular season last year, blew five saves. He's already blown three for the Orioles. It does not look good down there.
Yeah, no, it does not.
He's going to cost them a division.
He well could. And to be honest, Bob, that was one of the options for me today on one last thing.
Craig Kimbrell?
I was debating between Craig Kimbrell. Right, I was debating between him. I was debating between the Dodgers last night. They went an entire game without striking out. It's the first time that happened for them since 2006.
Wow,
I thought that was a pretty wild thing. I wanted to talk. I debated bringing up the Tampa Bay Rays getting swept by the White Sox over the weekend. Yeah. Like, I thought, like, these are all things we could do for one last thing.
Yeah, how do you do that if you're Tampa, right? Like, the White Sox are 3-22 going into play Friday night. So they've won three times in 25 games, and then they win three times in three games. That's like one where you're leaving the city. That game, that series was in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
You're packing up and leaving Chicago going, what the hell just happened?
Yes. I thought about bringing all that up, but I said there's one more issue around Major League Baseball. That's bigger since the week since
we. I know what you're going to bring up here. I know where we're going with this. It's the jerseys, right?
Yes, the jerseys. Yeah. The jersey thing. Yeah.
Thank you for giving me back my big letters. I very much appreciate it.
They basically threw Nike completely under the bus.
Yeah.
They absolved Fanatics of everything.
Well, did you see they have the Players Association has like an investment account, and a big part of their investment is in Fanatics.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was actually reading about this yesterday. They went hard as hell at Nike.
Yeah.
Absolve Fanatics. Everyone's like, well, there's actually a lot of financial considerations for the Players Association tied into Fanatics. So, of course, they're going to completely absolve Fanatics. It's interesting. I don't know too much about it, but someone was saying that the messaging in that internal memo that was leaked or provided to a media outlet, that there was some politics involved in that as well.
As there always is. Yeah. As there always is.
I'm excited because those jerseys – people will always say, and I know that this is probably what Nike and Fanatics were saying back in March or February when all hell broke loose, but just give it some time. People move on. Short attention spans. They'll get used to it. Oof.
How much do you think the one game where Bryce wore the old jersey?
I'm wearing the old jersey. Yeah,
had to do with some of this. Like, that was the first when I first saw the story. That was the first thing I thought of. Was like, that was a silent protest. He didn't talk about it. He just did it for one game, and then went back to the other one. And it made me think that's a message that's being sent out there for everybody, for Major League Baseball to see. Like, we've got to fix this.
I have at times looked at the jerseys and been like, whatever. You know, I stopped noticing it as much.
Yeah. But
you know when I always notice it is when Aaron Nola pitches. And you just see, like, the four letters, and they're so small. And I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
It looks like something that's sold on the corner. Or when you, like, you get a friend, everyone has a friend, and they're like, yo, I'm getting these jerseys from China. Yeah. Does anybody want one? You know, and you're like, okay, like, that's what that jersey looks
off
like.
The back of a truck.
Yeah. I got some discount website, and you're like, okay, like, and then they show up, and you're like, I guess it's good enough. Like, that's what that looks like, and that's what the players are wearing.
Well, and this is the thing that blows my mind the most, Bob. It's not like this is some rinky-dink company that came out of nowhere. This is Nike, for Nike. God's sake.
Yeah, it's Nike.
This is Nike. And maybe they should never have gone into the uniform construction business, right? I mean, maybe they should.
I will say, like, when you
with the public apparel, but
when
I mean,
you look at the jerseys up, when you look at the jerseys from like a pure standpoint, right? Like, you see this, you're on my shirt right now, you see these like three little trees.
Yeah,
there's this company, it's called Tripine. I like their stuff. Yeah. When you look at a jersey and you see the swoosh, you're like, oh damn, that's fresh, that looks good.
Yeah,
that little swoosh, like, it has like a certain aesthetic to it where you're like, that's sharp. I remember when they first switched over to Nike, I was like, that's sharp. That looks good.
Yeah.
But what they did here with this new model is just terrible.
Yeah. So. That's why it's so amazing to me and so fascinating to me, because this is probably the largest sports apparel company in the world.
Yeah.
And that screwed this up.
Yeah.
Like, how does that happen?
How does that happen? Yep.
Yeah. That's the thing. I'm waiting for the how they made the movie Air, right?
yeah, the behind the scenes look at the 2024 MLB jersey crisis.
Like, I can't wait for that version of the Nike movie to come out, because this has been an abject disaster from a standpoint of just being the manufacturer of sportswear. I mean,
so they said it would be rectified by no later than the start of the 25 season. I would imagine they'll work with some urgency to maybe rectify that by the end of this regular season.
I bet you that it's rectified by the All-Star game.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah.
I would imagine so.
So.
All right. Well, for Anthony Sanfilippo, I'm Bob Wankel. Make sure that you're following Anthony on X. I'm calling it X now, Anthony. I've made the transition. It'll always be Twitter in my heart, but I'll say X at AntSanPhilly. Follow me at Bob_Wankel. You can also follow the show account as well. And make sure that you're subscribing to my newsletter, Red October Philly. You can go to redoctoberphilly.com. Every Monday and Friday morning or late morning, right to your inbox. You can check that out as well. We'll be back later this week. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk soon.